Chris Moore.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Okay, hour two of the radio gig here till 10 o'clock. Chris Moore with you. Nice to have you with us wherever you may be. Brian Rascona and Pete Hoffman on the other side of the glass. They'll take good care of you when you call in, which will not be right now simply because we've got Brian Kenny coming up from MLB Network. And we're going to talk to Brian about the state of baseball and all that's gone on in this first half. Plus, some teams already at 99 games, so we are well past the halfway point. Actually, the only one I see that's there is the Astros. Astros have played 99 thus far. Yanks, by the way, have played 95. Red Sox, 98. Brian will be part of MLB Network's extensive All-Star Game coverage at National Park beginning tomorrow live at 2 o'clock, including MLB Tonight before and after the Home Run Derby and All-Star Game. Mr. Kenny, long time. How you been?
Good, Chris. Always good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you as well. So much that we could talk about. And I really want to get your sense, even though I do watch you quite a bit, I do want to get your sense and give our audience a sense of some of the issues in baseball and some of the things that are going on. So I'll kind of give you an opportunity to go off on a few different things. Lack of balance in the American League. Problem or no?
No, I like super teams. And there might be times where we'll get into a lull late in the season with teams that are out of it. The bonus from this, the reward that you get is just like last year's playoffs. Like, Chris, there's always, like, in any sport, like, there's usually one series that's just eh. And last year, they were all great. Even the wild card games were good. And once you got to the division series, because the better teams won the wild card, there were all these epic, great playoff series. So I like that.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about the shift because people are going to, especially during the break, given that, you know, a lot of the metrics are down. And the one thing about the shift, Brian, that interests me is that I don't find any fans that like it. Like when you make a rule change, you put the three-point play in the NBA, you change the chuck rule in football, you get people arguing. Oh, I like it. Oh, I don't like it. Now, people believe that competitively, everybody should have the right to play the shift. I don't get a lot of people arguing that. But in terms of optics, in terms of entertainment, it doesn't work for people that are paying to watch the game. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, you put it in a good way because it's innovative. It's part of the new wave of analytics and the new intelligentsia. But you're right, it's not fun, is it?
I mean, nobody likes it.
About it.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody likes it that watches the game. They respect it. They understand it gives you a competitive edge. They know why teams do it. They don't harbor any ill will toward it, but they don't like it. It doesn't make baseball better.
Yeah, except it can make it funky. But what we haven't seen is, you know, the reverse funk yet. We haven't seen it. Like, I wrote this in, like, 2012, Chris, that can you imagine what's going to happen in, like, September once the Red Sox are there playing a big series with the Rays and the Rays go into that? Because this was the start of it, right? The Rays
yep.
doing it to Big Poppy.
Yep.
And I said, can you imagine what it's like when the Red Sox give the order to Big Poppy, bunt four times in a row.
Right.
And he's on four straight times or three out of the four. What do the Rays do? Like, weird things are going to start happening. But, you know, just as the commissioner said, weird things really haven't happened. Occasionally, Rizzo will bunt, a few guys will bunt. But other than that, it's just guys hitting it right at that dude who's playing short
and
right.
And they're happy to have those guys on. If David Ortiz bunted four times, they'd be cheering in the opposition dugout. It's fine with them. Put him on the bases. Try to get him around. Good luck.
No, see, that's not true. I disagree with that. See, that's...
analytics tell them no one's going to get three hits in a row.
No.
They're not going to get three singles in a row.
Yeah, but now let me just tell you, let's say you're playing the shift. Let's say you're the Rays, all right, Chris? You're Kevin Cash, and you're the Rays. And you put drastic shifts on three of my Red Sox players, and I bunt every time, and I go a combined, I don't know, 8 for 11. You're going to get very nervous very quickly. You're going to have to do something. I can force your hand if I'm committed to it, but no one's done it yet.
But I'm throwing 96. You can't bunt 8 out of 11.
No, you can. Yeah, it's not even bunting. It's hitting it the other way. You got one dude playing shortstop, no third baseman, you know, nobody on the other side of the field, a left fielder who's playing the gap. There's plenty of room, but guys don't hit that way because they haven't been incentivized to hit that way. So we need to incentivize that next player who is now getting not promoted and not getting a scholarship because he's hitting like a 1970s singles hitter.
Will MLB be patient enough to wait for that?
Well, I don't know. I think that the cry, and you're not helping it, Chris, the hue and cry to do something, get rid of the shift, it's the low-hanging fruit. And I'm saying, if you're bored with one-dimensional sluggers in baseball, and we do have a lot of them, strikeouts are up, home runs are near record pace, not quite as high as last year, singles are at an all-time low. If you don't like the one-dimensional slugger, well, then don't put in legislation to protect the one-dimensional slugger. That's who it would protect.
Yeah, no, I think that part of the argument is good. And from a competitive standpoint, I hate to think you have to change the game to make it more entertaining. But the other leagues do it all the time. Baseball is obviously slow to change for obvious traditional reasons. And
Chris, let me throw this in, because actually it hasn't been. I mean, over the last 5 years, like when it went from Bud Selig to Rob Manfred, I mean, look at collision rules at the plate, collision rules at second, replay. A lot of things have changed in the last couple of years.
I guess for baseball that would be. But, you know, no one's clamoring to change it from 90 feet. Nobody wants to make any batting box changes or batter's box changes or anything like that. I mean, the fundamentals of the game, nobody wants to mess with, for sure. And it seems fair that you should be able to find a way to get a guy out. And if the shift is the way, then beat it. I mean, I agree with that. I agree with that. But it doesn't make for a better game for entertainment purposes. It just doesn't. How soon till we get openers everywhere or in a lot more common? How soon till we go two starters, maybe three, and then committee?
Oh, I think it's happening now. It's happening I think we've had four teams use an opener already. We're seeing, here's the other part. I think the main thing, we're seeing bullpen days that we're not even paying attention to. There's bullpen days going on, Chris, all around the country, and it can be the Padres, the Dodgers, the Rays, of course, make it a regular thing. But it's happening now and we're not even paying attention. So what we'll see first is not as much of the opener. I mean that will happen. But I think the next big wave is going to be just regular bullpen days on the day of your fourth and fifth starters. Because why not? It doesn't make sense.
In playoff games, would you do it?
Yeah, of course.
I think so, too. I think the Yankees, if they don't make a deal, could very easily in Game 3 start Green or Holder or whoever.
Oh, yeah. I like the way you think. See, I'm thinking if you're the Yankees and you're in a wild card, because the wild card game is built for it, to attack full throttle. However, if you do have an ace, now it didn't work out last year for Severino, it was a bullpen game.
Yes.
But if you have an ace, it's difficult to do because you're like, no, this is our best shot. Let this guy work the first inning, especially a guy like Severino this year with like a 2 ERA. But I like your thinking in that, let's say you've had a lot of length from your starters game one, game two, and you're thinking, hey, this is a pivotal game, and you have, right, the Yankees bullpen where I got six guys out here. Six guys who can legitimately, cover 8-9 innings beautifully with a sub-2 ERA. Why wouldn't you unleash the fury on the other team with
exactly
that?
And I got two left over for tomorrow if I need them to back up my starter. Because I got eight, nine guys. I mean, I got a ridiculous number of guys.
See, you've already brought up something, and I've started to throw it out there because it's so difficult for people to accept these new things. So everybody that's brought up the opener, because I talk about it on a regular basis on MLB Now.
Yes, you do.
And they talk about, oh, the opener, all right. And everyone says, listen, okay, we'll give you the Rays. But if you're the Astros, no. And I'm saying, no. If you're the Astros or the Yankees, and I have more weapons, I'm throwing more weapons at you.
Yeah. And today, for example, going into the break, the Indians, Tito used Carrasco in the eighth inning because he gave him his best shot. He used a starter in his eighth inning because of the schedule being the way it is. It's a 3-2 game or whatever. He gives me my best option. Then he went to Allen in the ninth. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen a lot, and it's just interesting to me, which folds me into my next question. Do we focus too much on starting pitching because of our preconceived notions? And I bring you the Mets, who have gotten very good starting pitching all year and are in last place. They haven't won a series since mid-May, and they have good starting pitching, better than average starting pitching.
Yeah, the Mets are a whole that we'd need a lot more time to study what's gone wrong there. But I'll give you like an example that Joel Sherman of the Post, who does our show a lot, has brought up continuously because he watches a lot of Mets baseball. He said, okay, you have your big guys, let them pitch. But he said, you know, down the stretch when it's like, hey, where are we going to go? Let's go get our AAA guy to give us a spot start. On that day, for example, why not use your bullpen or go to a tandem start with, you know, if everybody's healthy, you know, and this could have worked beautifully for a while, Gesellman and Lugo.
Right.
Like instead of saying, like if you're actually contending and you're, instead of getting a AAA guy, a TJ Conlin and hoping for the best, say, hey, you know what? I got Gesellman and Lugo. And then I'm going to go to my, if I'm leading or within a run, I'm going A-list on you in the bullpen. That this, you know, is if everything's going well and everybody's healthy. But they could have done that early, and instead, conventional thinking, no, we better use PJ Conlin. That way of thinking is going to be, you're correct, a thing of the past real soon.
Brian Kenny, MLB.com, or MLB Network, I should say, joining us, and you see him all the time, and he'll be part of the extensive coverage of this All-Star game coming up. I wanted to ask you this question. The top five teams in runs in Major League Baseball are Boston, Houston, the Yankees, Cleveland, and the Cubs. The bottom four teams in runs are the Mets, the Padres, the Orioles, and Royals. So while we focus on pitching and we love to talk about it, and oh boy, the Yankees have to have another starter, I'm telling you, you got to score. The Mets are a great example of it, but you better score runs. And right now, most people think that the World Series champion will be Boston, Houston, Yankees, Cleveland, or the Cubs, and they're all the top five teams in runs scored.
Well, I think it's a team is a dynamic organism. You need everything, obviously. And I think what we're seeing now, to circle back to your first question, is true, is that we have teams now that have everything. And that's not always the case. You know, it's rare to have, like, think back to the glory days of the Yankees, Red Sox, the Jeter, you know, Bernie Williams Yankees versus Pedro and Manny Ramirez. It's rare to have two superpowers, like, built up massively the way those two clubs were for a number of years. That's kind of what we have now with those, like, first four clubs you talked about. I think the Indians are not far behind, and the Dodgers should have been one of those teams. So
the Dodgers are ninth right now in runs scored.
Yeah, the Dodgers should be there. The Cubs haven't quite hit on all cylinders, but the Yankees are a super team. I mean, Chris, we know they're great. They're freaking great. And yet, the Red Sox seem to be a little better. Astros, I still think, are better. So we're just in an era of these built-up teams, and we haven't gotten to the trade deadline where they do their finishing touches as of yet. So I think you're just looking at teams that, yeah, I mean, the lineups of those teams are, you know, Cubs, Yankees, Red Sox, Astros. The lineups are ridiculous.
Red Sox on pace. Right now they've struck out 117 fewer times than the Yankees, and they've played three more games. So prorating it out, they've struck out about 140 fewer times than the Yankees. Is that something the Yankees should be worried about?
Yeah, look, that helps. Everything helps. When you get to a certain point, contact matters. And there is that theory of, you know, a lot of people throw it out there, of the Giants and the Royals over the last 5 years have had success in the playoffs because there is something to putting the ball in play, which I'm not saying it's not true, because we're in an era of incredibly high strikeouts. It's, you know, we're yet again, I think, for the 10th or 11th straight year, setting a new record. So I think, you know, the thing about that, when Giancarlo Stanton was signed, you know, it seems silly to say, well, Judge and Stanton are going to strike out a lot. Well, yeah, they're going to slug 550 and strike out a lot, so it's not like a problem. But if you compare it to, hey, what if you had those two guys and they both didn't strike out? Well, yes, you'd be better. And so there are the teams that put the ball in play in playoff time will have, I'm not saying it's a huge advantage, but it definitely is an advantage.
You got five more minutes for me?
For you, anything.
Yeah. Oh, you're a good man. Then I'm gonna keep you here then, because I got a couple more things I want to get to. Let's talk a little bit about Joe Girardi and St. Louis. Is this a match? I mean, it seems on paper to make so much sense, but you know, we're here in New York, and you cover it nationally better than anybody else. So tell us what your thoughts are and whether it'd be a good fit.
Well, I keep hearing that, and I think it would be. Although again, Joe is working with me a lot, so that'd be tough to leave.
I think, ooh, that, you know, I mean, that, you know, I had a, I know I had a hard time.
You found it easy like four or five times.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's there you go.
Joe is funny, though. He comes in, he'll walk in right into the room and say, hey, how come you and I aren't working together today? Are they keeping us apart? I want to go after you on a few things. I'm like, all right, take it easy, Joe. I'm just minding my own business. But yes, so we have great discussions. I think he enjoys it. And yet, I think we all have the feeling that whatever time he wanted to take, you know, from that, you know, bruising run that the Yankees made last year, you know, to game 7 of the championship series, you know, time with his family, everything else, I think he's tanned and rested. And I think he wants to manage again. And I think the Cardinals are always going to be a pretty good job, even if they look a little less than the superpowers right now. So, yes, it's a good fit. And I think if they also know if right now Girardi is there wasn't the right fit for him in the offseason. But sooner or later, there's going to, like, whoever is next or next after that is going to snap him up.
Yeah, and he can, right, with his resume, sort of take the right job, take the job that he's most comfortable with. He doesn't have to jump at the first one.
Yeah, he's very competent, and he's proven that. And I think managers, too, I know a number of managers have said this to me, that you if you're evolved in your thinking, you get better at this. You get smarter. And even like Lloyd McClendon, like his second time around, he was at the Mariners. Now he's since lost that job. But I said, you know, do you think you're a better manager? And he said, oh, of course. He goes, I'm smarter. You know, you're smarter in your 50s than you are in your 40s if you're thinking. You know, and if you're managing, I think a lot of the things that Joe, you know, could get better at, and that's like just like having a more, I don't want to stereotype him, but just not having the hyper intensity all the time. That, and I know that's an oversimplification, but that hyper intensity, I think, is the first thing to go as you get 5-6 years older out of your 40s. So I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah, I thought last year that he really, I did say this a lot, I thought he was taking each regular season game as if it was a playoff game. And I think it's a hard way to live in that league when you play 162 to be under stress all the time. And I felt every press conference, it looked like he had been under stress. Like he wasn't having as much fun as he used to have. And I don't know why that was, but I just felt like that was his undoing here.
Well, here's the next thing then. And I've said this for a number of years, and you can bring it up with whether it's Mike Matheny, because I wrote about this in my book about Matheny in the 2013 World Series, or about Buck Showalter in that wild card game when he didn't use Zach Britton, or now apply it to Joe Girardi. The job is too big for one guy. Joe Girardi's great at a lot of things in managing. You know, there's like a few things he could get better at.
Right.
Mike Matheny was said to be really good relating to his players, having a nice, easy clubhouse, guys being focused and being themselves, but tactically he wasn't great. So nobody is perfect. Even Buck Showalter, who is probably the best out there, he's not perfect. Obviously, he showed that with the Zach Britton situation, that he became so insular, nobody could tell him something that was happening right in front of him that was obvious because he was just all too powerful and all knowing.
Right.
So the job's too big for one guy. I would make a managerial staff, and yes, it would be like the College of Coaches with the Cubs in the 60s, and people would laugh. But you know what? I would have one guy who is still my CEO. There's still one guy who is the last guy to choose. But on any given day, you can have like three people rotating, and they're all in charge, and there's one last decision maker. But if that last decision maker, say, is Joe Girardi, on any given day, you can say, hey, Joe, go work in the bullpen today. Just go in. We'll do it. We'll cover it today. We have an IT staff in the back. We have an operations department that's going to be helping our other guys make decisions all the time anyway. I'd have it make like it wouldn't even be a three-man managerial system. That would be the three top executives. But then I would have the operations department right behind them in the dugout, helping them in real-time tactical moves. The game moves too fast for one guy.
And to have to answer to the media and all the little ancillary things and the ups and downs of AAA and who's coming up and who's going back down and who's feeling a twinge today and, you know, what's our matchup with this left-hander versus this batter and what's their history and all. I agree with you. I think it's absolutely true that it is more difficult than ever. And sometimes, you know, you're just smothered by too much information. We are in our business. You can bet they are in their business. You know, the stock market business, guys that are dealing that. There's just so much information now that it almost smothers you at times. And I felt like he was there last year.
Yeah, and you're right. Even those jobs on themselves that you just threw in at the end, dealing with the media, being kind of the public face of the organization on an everyday basis, that alone is a full-time job. So you've got somebody in your, you know, triumvirate who is going to be that guy, have Mr. Media-friendly guy, and then you have your tactician in there, your Buck Showalter type, and maybe I have Joe Girardi with him, and there's three guys doing the job. And you know what? You figure it out. It's not that difficult.
All right, a Met question, a Yankee question, and you're out. The Met question is, how do you start to fix this? So many people wondering whether if trading DeGrom and Syndergaard is the only way to build a base because their minor league system is so weak on talent, it's so poorly rated right now. How do you get players if you keep DeGrom and Syndergaard? What would you do first if you were the Mets general manager?
Yeah, I would think that is the... If you're really looking to overhaul it and get to your next playoff team of 2020 or 2021, the way to do it actually is to trade both of those guys, to lock up Nimmo, Conforto, all your young players that have already shown they can be your regulars, and move forward. Because even though you still have club control, and I forget exactly the club control of Syndergaard and DeGrom, one is a little longer than the other.
DeGrom's three, yeah.
Yeah, it's not quite enough, and you can get a haul for those guys right now. A haul. If you wait around, injuries happen, the bloom comes off the rose, or the market changes. So it sounds drastic, but it's not their fault. They're the survivors. Unfortunately, everything else is crumbled. Their offense is not. They're not a good baseball team. You know, like they're not. And certain guys can hit. And I like Todd Frazier, but they're just kind of station to station, and Cespedes doesn't play, and it's so you've got to do your drastic overhaul and look to flip, and then spend money on top of that. Yankees flipped faster than anybody. I mean, they went from that old rusted out A-Rod Beltran Teixeira team to a new sleek model very quickly. It might take longer than that if you're the Mets. But you're going to have to go holistically into it.
And Atlanta and Philadelphia's resurgence don't help, do they?
No, exactly. Actually, you know what? You're right. And they've arrived this year. And hey, by the way, the new Nationals have arrived too. Like, you know, Soto is great. And even if Harper leaves, then Victor Robles is on the way up. They still have, you know, an outstanding pitching staff. So they're not going anywhere. So you're better off saying, we're not winning the next 2 years. We got to look at our window, 2021, maybe 2020, but 2021 likely, and shoot for the best possible Mets team of that year.
Yankees, everyone crying for a pitcher. What do you think Brian Cashman does, and we'll let you go?
I think they could be helped by what they thought Sonny Gray was, right? Just a good starter there. But I think actually, like Brad Hand, is the best application for what they need. Because they're really good. Like, they're a great team. So what do they really need? What they really need is another, like, killer to get outs in big spots. Another one. Because you're going to be tightening up your rotation come playoff time anyway, whether you're playing a wild card or if you do get a division series. And they're likely to get a division series. And then when you're going up against the other superpowers, you know, of the Red Sox or the Astros, and more than likely that's going to happen, what really helps you best? Not another good version of Sonny Gray, but Brad Hand getting you four outs, or Brad Hand getting you one out, or Brad Hand getting you six outs, on top of all those other dudes you have in the bullpen. That actually makes you a team that nobody would want to mess with, and a team that would get maximum outs in big spots.
And give me a quick word on Gleyber Torres.
Oh, he's a superstar. I mean, that's why I'm so surprised to hear this Yankees and Machado stuff, in that by the time Torres was hitting and Duhar was hitting and Didi is having a nice prime right now, like if I'm the Yankees, I'm done. Like, game over, we won, and I don't have to worry about those spots. My main thing is now extending those guys and paying them, because you've done it. No, Torres, if you're, you know, his age, was he 20? Is he age 20, 21?
21,
and,
yeah.
And he's slugging 540 or whatever it is now. And even Andujar slugging 500 at age 23. you're set. I mean, that's what made them a monster team, is that suddenly you have a guy, and you can see what happens when Torres went out. That's a superstar bat, and he's performing that way right now this year.
Brian Kenny, evidence that passion never goes out of style. You're a good man, my brother, and I appreciate you giving us a half hour, and I know our audience appreciates it as well. Have a great time down in Washington. Keep up the great work, and we'll be watching.
Thanks, Chris. Chris, go easy on the shift, please. Don't kill the shift.
I'll go easy on the shift.
Go easy, please. I hate the shift.
I hate it. I love you. I hate it.
I get it.
Have a good night, bud.
All right.
There you go. Brian Kenny of MLB Network, and of course, does a great job. And we appreciate him giving us an extra 10 minutes there. Just so much to talk about and so many diverse opinions. We didn't get into the Hall of Fame, but he's great. And it is true, right? It is true. That's my little philosophy of the day. Passion never goes out of style. He has great passion for what he does, and it's one of the main reasons he's great at what he does.